So, especially the people who are brand new, then won't mind if I dramatically depart from our norm. And I'd like to start where the theme for tonight and for this month is sukha, or happiness. Happiness. And there's something that just feels wrong to me about launching into a serious talk dissecting happiness. There's something about that. So we will do that. But first, we'll just start with a little bit of chanting. And the wonderful thing about having a teenager almost is that my ability to tolerate awkwardness is growing exponentially by the day. And to feel uncomfortable and make others uncomfortable is also growing by leaps and bounds. So I'd like to roll with that and start with some chanting. So this is one, many of you will know it. This is from Tuareg. And because she has such a beautiful voice, I'm going to let you hear her voice, but it repeats twice, so I'll play it just a few times and you'll get the hang of it very quickly. If you know it, you can just join in right away. You'll get the idea. I don't need to explain it. Okay.
Happiness is here and now. I have dropped my worries. Nowhere to go, nothing to do. I don't need to hurry. Happiness is here and now. I have dropped my worries. Somewhere to go. Something to do, but I don't need to worry.
Okay, so two stanzas, each a little bit different. Happiness is here and now. I have dropped my worries. Nothing, nowhere to go, nothing to do. I don't need to hurry. And then the second one is happiness is here and now. I have dropped my worries. Somewhere to go, something to do. I don't need to hurry. Okay, so let's just do it a couple times. And it's okay to be awkward. Okay.
Happiness is here and now. I have dropped my worries. Nowhere to go, nothing to do. I don't need to hurry. Happiness is here and now. I have dropped my worries. Somewhere to go, something to do. But I don't need to hurry. Happiness is here and now. I've dropped my worries. Nowhere to go, nothing to do. I don't need to hurry. Happiness is here and now. I have dropped my worries.
So Sometimes there's a more direct, more direct way. Yeah. So I've done a lot of caregiving work in my life, a lot of work in elder care, and worked once in an adult family home in which many people had various forms of dementia and or memory loss. And so when anyone was having a particularly difficult day and moods are contagious, you know, have you noticed? They spread quickly. So whenever people were spiraling, the nurse administrator would find something to sing. And very quickly, usually, it was irresistible. If you knew the song, you had to join in. And memory and songs, as many of you probably know, are stored in a different place in terms of memory. So even if our short-term memory is gone, oftentimes many people can remember songs from very early on. So I think about that when I'm using chanting as a practice or music of some kind. It gets kind of can get to a deeper level of our being often. Okay, so this theme of sukha or happiness, how many people have heard a talk on happiness this month already? Yeah. Good. Some, not all. Great. It's a wonderful thing to contemplate. And the another wonderful thing about the series that we're exploring this year is that especially at the start, so here we have all these the good weather months, and we're exploring things like joy, rapture, and happiness. So it'll be a little bit different maybe in the fall when we get to disenchantment and disillusionment and all of that. But it's wonderful to be developing, I think of it as a vocabulary or a fluency with some of our more positive emotions, right? To be developing a range in our own experience of our inner states and what we can recognize. And the key to this, or the heart of this teaching this year, is that it isn't that we concentrate our mind, we focus hard, we bear down, we eliminate distractions in order to get happy, right? Or to get over ourselves, or to get to the finish line. But it's really much more about the art of getting to know ourselves and our minds and our tendencies well, so that we can feel okay enough already with the way things are. The Buddha talked about a pleasant abiding here and now. Yeah, not perfect, but using our attention so that we can come into the present moment in a way that we are not struggling against it, fighting with ourselves, trying to get something out of it. And that is actually what helps the mind heart collect and unify and gather. So the art of it is knowing how to work with our own minds in a way that encourages a kind of well-being in the moment. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about that more as we go. But oftentimes we think of it as it's almost exactly opposite to our American work ethic, which is you work really hard, full speed, and then you deserve a rest after that. This is finding the mind's contentment here and now as these factors start to come together and support each other. So this map that we're exploring talks about how conditions support each other or give rise to qualities that are mutually kind of reinforcing or beneficial. So this quality of dukkha or suffering can so easily give rise to greater craving or resistance or reactivity that sets us up for a whole cycle that reinforces a sense of dukkha, suffering, and this whole kind of circular pattern just continues on, right? Continues on, repetitive, circular. And this map that we're exploring this year takes the dukkha as the starting place. And instead of being stuck in a whole another repetitive cycle of suffering, the dukkha starts to give rise to faith or confidence or trust, right? Because we've gone through this cycle again and again. We know it. We aren't completely fooled by it. We understand what some of our tendencies are. We know what's happening. So instead of going through another round, we instead, some of that energy starts to break free and out of its kind of enclosure. And so suffering becomes the supporting condition for faith or confidence. Faith or confidence becomes the supporting condition for joy, a kind of gladness. Gladness becomes the supporting condition for what's called rapture or delight. Delight becomes the supporting condition for tranquility or calm. And calm becomes the supporting condition for happiness. That's where we are now, happiness. And so it's less of a linear progression where one, okay, check, got that. Now I'm going up a step to the next one. I leave that one behind and now I'm getting to there. And this one's better than that one. It's not like that. It's more like a color palette, you know, where the previous one blends into the next. So when we get to something like sukha, it has a flavor of delight, of joy, of confidence, but it also, most predominantly, it has a flavor of the calm that just came before it, right? So sometimes this rapture quality or PT can be so intense that it's unhelpful. It's actually a bit agitated, right? So I like to quote Temple Smith, who calls PT like being sometimes overly caffeinated, right? Now with caffeine, there's a sweet spot where you are interested in what's happening around you. You feel like you have energy and vitality and you're engaged, but you're not wired, you know, you're not overly excited. So PT or delight, intense delight, if we soften it a little bit and remember that calm is actually more useful, then what tends to be coming into being is more of a contentment. So sukha can be translated as happiness, contentment ease, but it has the flavor of being okay to stay where one is, you know, to be okay with things as they are in this moment. So, but there's a sense of happiness about it. Like it's good to be here. So for most of us, myself very much included, this is not immediate. Yeah, this is not our default setting. How many people have happiness as their default setting? I'm not sure that that many people are signing up for our classes and courses if happiness is your default setting. Maybe it's to some degree. But what practice allows is allows us to really begin to sense all of these different supporting conditions and to be able to see, oh, it's actually really useful when my mind has some energy, it has interest, I have a sense of my own vitality, it feels okay to be here. And those are a result of letting our steering our attention to different aspects of our experience in a skillful way. So we do have some ability to steer where we place our attention, right? We often don't have control over what happens around us, but we do have a little bit of an ability to steer how we how our attention lands and how we relate to what's happening. Okay, so sukha is translated as, again, happiness, ease, well-being. The etymology of it is in exact contrast to dukkha. So most people have probably heard the word dukkha. That's translated as literally a bad fit. So it comes from, at the time of the Buddha was always using similes and analogies that people would recognize to compare states of mind or teachings to things that people would already recognize. So dukkha was meant to, or was compared to the way that the axle of it was like a chariot at that time, would fit into the wheel that would pull the cart or the chariot. So if the axle fit into the hole of the wheel in a way that wasn't a good fit, that was called dukkha. Yeah, bad fit or bad hole. So dukkha. And if it was a good fit, it was called sukha, which meant that the ride was a little bit easier. Yeah, it was a little bit easier for a while. So there's a distinction between the feeling tone of dukkha or sukha and the actual state. So we can recognize in our own experience, if we're very close to sensations, sensations of breathing, sensations in the body, the second foundation of mindfulness has us explore that with every sensation, there is a feeling tone. That is part of what we can't control. Things arise and we can notice they're either pleasant, sukha, unpleasant, dukkha, or neutral, neither pleasant nor unpleasant. And so without awareness, if we are just running from habit, that pleasantness will give rise, or the unpleasantness will immediately give rise to a certain kind of reaction. Let me get away from this as soon as possible. But the pleasantness will also give rise to a certain kind of reaction. Maybe the pleasantness gives rise to complacency Or maybe the pleasantness gives rise to greed, wanting more of it. Maybe the pleasantness gives rise to a sense of arrogance or pride, like, oh, I deserve this. This is me. But with awareness, we can actually make use of both of our dukkha and our sukha for the development of our minds on the way to freedom. We make use of not just the unpleasant, but also the pleasant. It can be very useful, and in fact, we recommend it all the time, that when you're sitting down to practice, you let the awareness rest on sensations that are somewhat pleasant or neutral for some time. Yeah. If we're sitting down and plunging right into the unpleasant every time we sit down, meditation becomes a real chore, becomes agonizing and a bit of a struggle. So it's not that all things are supposed to be pleasant all the time. They're not. But we can let our attention land on the pleasant in order to help cultivate stability, steadiness, calm, yeah, and happiness. Yeah. So these conditions are very helpful in, especially in cultivating concentration or collectedness, gatheredness. So that kind of color palette or color wheel, sukha, happiness, is right in between calm, tranquility, and concentration or gatheredness. Yeah. So this kind of happiness, contentment, ease is makes it very natural for the mind to gather into concentration. It doesn't take an act of strong, forceful will. We do need to apply some effort, but it is not the kind of bearing down or forceful, willful effort. So in this way, if we're aware of dukkha, we can actually steer. We can keep an unpleasant experience from becoming an unpleasant state, from becoming an unpleasant I. If we're aware of dukkha and its rawness. And if we're aware of sukha, we can watch and prevent the pleasant from becoming a source of delusion or craving, and instead becoming a base of steadiness and ease that is very helpful for concentration or samadhi. Okay, so it does take some willingness to experiment with steering. Now, I know when I first started practice, I was very intent on just letting things be how they are. They were. They are. In letting things be however they were, and not trying to change them or incline at all. Yeah. And so when I was first sitting, the thought that I would try to gladden my mind at all or incline towards well-being felt heretical. No, you have to just sit and grimly be with things exactly as they are, right? So that is a recipe for blowing a fuse, which you can do. You can do it that way. But what I would notice is even in my teachers who were more kind of grim and serious in the meditation instruction and in the hall, when they got to the talks, very happy, very contented, very at ease in their skin, right? And so this was a quality that made a big impression on me. Number one, awakening has all different kinds of expressions, right? We can't always tell exactly how someone's inner state is by what it looks like on the outside. But there was this sense of this being a very serious, important endeavor. And just like Wes Nisker said at the beginning, and one of the benefits or the fruits of practice is that we don't take ourselves so seriously, right? So in that, holding both of those, there comes to be a great sense of ease. Yeah, ease in one's being, happiness for the whole endeavor, I would say. So this kind of sukha that we're cultivating here is not the kind of sweetness or happiness that you would get from a happy, pleasant sensory experience, getting something that you like, that tastes good or feels really good, or you know, things just the way you like it. It can be helpful for a moment, but what's most important is the kind of inner sense of sukha. So eventually we can move from needing pleasant external circumstances to support an inner sense of well-being, and that we can become more independent so that we don't need external circumstances as much to generate an internal sense of well-being or happiness, but we can start to generate that internally all on our own by noticing the effects of the practice as it's taking hold. So this sukha arises from deepening practice and noticing the effects of the previous conditions as they're coming together. I have more confidence than I did when I first started. Right? Yeah, I have more trust in the practice. There is a greater sense of my own vitality and interest. We can enjoy that. It can help lead to happiness here and now. So our happiness becomes more robust over time. It's helpful to practice in circumstances where we have a lot of support, where it's easier. And then eventually we can be in circumstances that are quite challenging, where there perhaps is a lot of conflict, dis-ease, disharmony, and we still have a kind of baseline to come back to, fall back on. Okay. So these are good things to contemplate. Wanted to hopefully just convey a sense of happiness for being able to cultivate in this way at all, right? So I know in Scotland they have a special dictionary, heard about this the other day, in which there are 421 words for snow and snowy kinds of weather, right? Because they need to talk about the weather a lot, or would like, you know, want to talk about how to navigate during different kinds of weather conditions. So if we can start to discern and tease apart these different kinds of happiness, well-being, joy, trust, it's like being able to align with all different kinds of weather conditions. Right? So there was recently a podcast, an interview with the New York Times journalist Ezra Klein and Pema Chodron. I'm sure many of you heard that or listened to it. And I know many people sent that to me over the weekend that it came out. And one of the things she said that I loved was, in practice, we are learning how to collaborate with reality. We're learning how to collaborate with reality. So some of us in practice, especially if we've been at it a while, get the sense that we're only practicing if we're eyeball to eyeball with dukkha. The unpleasant kind of dukkha, yeah? But reality has the pleasant as well as the unpleasant. It has the bitter as well as the sweet. It has the joyful as well as the sorrowful. So if we are intending to be open to the whole range of human experiences, we don't waste our dukkha or our sukha. It doesn't mean that we need to work hard, work hard when we're experiencing pleasant, but it does mean that we can linger a bit, enjoy, and also, I think here, a sense of gratitude is extremely helpful. I think the link, where that link between the pleasant and greed gets loosened, is if we're grateful. Ah, this moment is a bit more pleasant, right? This part of my body is not in pain. I am grateful for even being able to be here at all. Yeah, sitting in a room, relatively climate controlled, with other humans who are interested in things like this, and feeling that we have the capacity to explore and examine our own experience. That makes me happy. So the sense of being able to step back just a little bit from the particulars and being able to sense into a kind of goodness in the situation itself, in the whole overarching scope of the situation, is very, very helpful and leads to and supports that kind of contentment, happiness. All right, so before I open it up, I wanted to first just mention, so this way of collaborating with reality is really working with our minds rather than against them. And we are also artfully finding our way up until we're, the mind is concentrated or collected. We're really navigating hindrances of various kinds. Yeah, so we're navigating wanting and not wanting, restlessness and sluggishness and doubt. And so what's helpful in that are several things that I mentioned in the guided practice before we took the break. And these classically, I don't want you to get intimidated by this, but these classically are called the five jhana factors. So jhana is a kind of concentration that is about absorbing into an object, kind of deep concentration. And there are particular methods and techniques that guide us towards jhana, but the factors that go into supporting the mind's ability to absorb are helpful to know about. And they're helpful just to recognize, because they help us steer through the hindrances and they help support, sukha is right in here. So these are five factors that help us navigate through the hindrances. and are also just helpful in understanding supportive conditions and what leads to the arising of a collectedness of mind. So the first two are vitaka vichara. So many of you will have heard these before. Sometimes vitaka and vichara are aiming and sustaining, and they have to do with the relationship to whatever object we've chosen, the breathing, the body, sounds, whatever it might be. So vitaka is our ability to choose where we place attention. Yeah. So sometimes we talk about it as inviting attention to land, which I find more helpful. This is the active quality. We choose where we place our attention. So a million things could be happening around us right now. Yeah, there could be sounds and flashing lights and all these things. So where do we let our attention land? So this is the placing. So we frequently come back to the body, come back to breathing, come back to an awareness of sensations, states. So placing the attention and then sensing into what it's like, right? This is the more receptive. What's it actually like? So I'm aware of my breathing. And then I notice, is it jagged or smooth? Is it long or short? Is it feel kind of stuck? Or does it feel expansive? Not verbally, but we're just sensing into the qualities that we notice in the object. Yeah. So we can do that with anything. We can do it with hearing, the body. But it has these two aspects, vitaka vichara, placing, sensing. Placing, sensing, active, receptive. These two are extremely helpful. They balance each other and they help balance the mind as it settles towards collectedness. Okay, the next pair is there are qualities that we just have explored. So piti and sukha. Piti is that delight, that caffeinated feeling, where there's really, in the body, there's a sense of your own vitality. The energy starts moving more cleanly and fully through the whole body. It feels less obstructed. Mentally, there's a sense of interest and engagement. So again, if we get too far in the interest and engagement and the intensity of the vitality, we lose the sukha or the contentment, the happiness. So one funny story to make this a little more real. As I was on a retreat in the Forest Refuge in Massachusetts, I was on a three-month retreat there and had quick interviews with teachers during that time and kind of checking, like, what's the state of the mind? Is there interest? And so I was noticing a lot of interest, a lot of vitality, a lot of that kind of intense PT, to the point where, you know, natural things around you start to become really interesting or fascinating, right? Really hold your interest. It's like, wow. So on retreat a couple of weeks ago, as I was teaching a retreat, at a certain point in the retreat, we can always be sure that everybody goes from, not everyone, but more and more the conversations become less and less about, oh, my aching knees and my back, and start shifting to, I saw this amazing water snake on the pond. Yeah. Or did you hear the frogs last night? Right. All of a sudden there's this, oh, everything's alive. Right. And I'm part of it. So anyway, I'm at the Forest Refuge, and I was explaining to the teacher how I had just discovered this amazing, because they're wild turkeys, and I had just followed one into the bush, and I was looking at it, and it was just like, I can't believe that this animal exists with these feathers and this shape. And this teacher said, Carrie, it's good to be interested and what's around you, but maybe for the purposes of retreat, being this fascinated is probably not helpful, right? So it's like just increase that sense of calm and tranquility a little bit. Yeah, dial down a little bit the fascination and the interest. Yeah, it's a good quality, but just dial it back a little bit. And so that was very helpful. Like, yes, okay, here now, you pull back from the object. But we can have that same combination of vital interest, delight, and contentment with our breathing. With our experience here and now, being in a body, in a what Gary Snyder called a, I don't know if I can even recreate this, a sexy primate clown suit, right? Right? Imperfect. We can be interested in that. What is it like in this moment? And letting go of a little bit of our sense of taking ourselves completely seriously, there can be a kind of contentment. Yeah. We can be grateful and a bit wondrous just to be in this experience at all. Knee pain and all, awkwardness and all, anxiety and all. Yeah. So this is sukha, contentment. So placing and sensing is the part we have control over. We have some influence over where we place our attention and how we can be sensitive to what we notice. Piti and sukha are what arise naturally. We can notice those, be sensitive to those also. And then the fifth one is one-pointedness or gatheredness. This is where the attention starts to be content to stay where it is. Content to stay where it is. In this, and so we'll talk about this more next month as we get into concentration, but you start to get the sense that this is as good a moment as any. Yeah, it's not somewhere else. It's not getting the next thing. It's not making something go away. But this is as good a moment as any. So the inquiries or the prompts that we can use to encourage sukha or contentment or happiness, this kind of happiness, is we can encourage things like, is it enough in this moment? Can it be enough in this moment? Can this be enough? And we just let that question float. We just let that question float. We can also take a cue from Tuari's chant and from a prompt that Rodney Smith used to always offer, which was, you know, the discontented mind is always searching for something else, something it's going to get in just a moment or later. But the contented mind is aware that happiness is already here. Right? So Rodney would say again and again, it's already here. It's already here. And Tuari's chant, happiness is here and now. So we can remind ourselves. I find questions a little bit easier, but you can do what works for you. Is it already here? Is it already here? And can we steer a little bit through our experience, through letting vitaka and vichara, placing and sensing, land to help support us in really knowing that in a full-bodied way. So we can be at ease in our own skin. At ease in our own skin. Again, looking at the teachers that I most admire, There has been a lot of wisdom and so much clarity and precision, and each teacher kind of embodying a slightly different quality, different emphasis. But it's wonderful to see somebody who is really at ease in their own skin, their own humanness, in their own humanness. So this is Sukha. This is Sukha. Okay, so let's just take a moment and sit that. And just letting the words land however they will, letting them be enough. Letting whatever you remembered or didn't, or understood or didn't, letting that be enough. Okay, thank you, everybody. So we have some time for your questions or reflections, your own experiences with this quality. Should say that I will be here next week also, so we'll have more discussion time next week. But I'd love to hear a little bit from you if anybody's willing.
Thank you.
Okay.
So I don't have a question, really, but this whole month's topic is very, very interesting. So I'll try to not ramble too long, but for me, there's an aspect in my life where happiness is extremely hard to reach or to be in, and that's work. And for my whole life, like,
yeah.
Before finishing school, I was excited to retire. You know, so that makes for a very long life, you know, if you have to work for 40 years or something. And most days, I dread going to work. Like, I wake up at whatever time and damn, I need to go clock in for 10 hours, clock out.
Yep.
And I hear what you said and what Tim said last week. And it makes a lot of sense, kind of rationally. Like, I get it.
Yeah.
But for me, like, the only way I work is by telling myself that eventually I won't work. Right? Like, I'm working to retire.
Yeah.
But that's not the way I want to live.
Yeah.
Because that's a very long life. So, do you have any, maybe, like, tips and tricks or like something basic I can do, because some of the stuff you said resonates, like you can try to steer the attention, or sometimes I try to think about things that are pleasant, like being in nature, but that seems to worsen it for me, because then I realize, damn, I'm sitting on a chair for another like 40 hours this week instead of being in nature.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think in some ways, thanks for that, actually. And I imagine many people can relate to some aspect of that too. And I can also hear the dukkha in it, right? And the dukkha is part of the wisdom of dukkha and being close to dukkha is that we contact our longing to be free, right? And that has energy and power. You know, that's a wholesome, in a way, that's a wholesome energy, wanting to be free in all circumstances, not just when ones that are, you know, carefully curated, or not just after retirement. So that longing is important and good. But in practice too, we also start where it's easy, and hopefully we can expand the arenas in which we can contact the support of practice, right? So maybe at home, you can tap into an ease that feels a bit more natural, yeah, more with more connection, more steadiness, yeah. And so to start where it's easy, and then when we do that, we develop a relationship with the object, right? So we contact our breathing, or we're aware of our body, and that is like a relationship that develops over time. At first, we're strangers, can't find the breath. Breath doesn't seem like it could be that comforting, but over time, we develop a relationship with the object. So in a wider range of circumstances, we're able to just recognize, oh, there it is. It becomes more of a support. Yeah, becomes more of a support. And so we'll pop out thinking, oh, I've just got to get through this. Just got to get to the end of this. We can recognize, oh, that's just a thought. It's a thought that comes and goes. Breathing's still there. The body's still there. Yeah. And so that kind of, in a way, that contentment becomes more portable, but also our ability to hold the dukkha of the situation becomes stronger. The sense of awareness and being able to be with the unpleasant. You know? So the mind will project onto that situation saying, this is how it's always going to be. It's not going to be any different. I'm stuck in this kind of world, square world. But that's just a projection of your mind. So when the mind state changes, the impression of the outer also changes. So it's working both with the dukkha, but also with the sukha, yeah, the contentment. Basically the whole practice. Yeah. But thank you, Runa. I mean, I can really feel the sincerity and honesty and longing in your question. It's like, I don't want to spend the whole rest of my life, yeah, clocking in and clocking out and then retiring. I mean, that's real. That's real. And that's very motivating for practice. So use that motivation. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Oh, yes. Emery. Emmy. Do you still go by Emmy or no?
No, Emery. Oh,
okay.
Rhyming with memory.
Yes.
Cool.
Good.
Thank you so much for your talk. It was beautiful. And the guidance during our meditation was also really helpful and beautiful. And I wanted to sort of piggyback on what the young person in the room was talking about. And I the circumstances in my life over the last year or so have been such that it has been easier for me to experience sukha and experience that a moment or a situation or even my life is enough and is just fine, and I don't need to struggle so much with it. However, I would say that a year or two or three or five ago, my day-to-day life was much more stressful, overwhelming, overstimulating to my nervous system, and that just wasn't available as much. It was much harder to feel that way. I could feel that way as almost like an escape. It felt like I could go for a walk and experience a flower or experience a squirrel, and it was like a little vacation. But then I had to come back and face the hard circumstances of my life. And so I don't know if there's a question in there, but I guess just an acknowledgement that, you know, as human beings, we do have, yeah, these brains and bodies that get overwhelmed by too much. And it, you know, and that is dukkha. And I learned a lot from it, but it was very painful. And there were times it felt very unrewarding. Practice felt very unrewarding. And, you know, I was thinking about that during your talk and then really thinking about that during the last person's comments. So I don't know if you have a comment about any of that.
Thanks, Emery. Yeah. There are times that practice will feel unrewarding. So I think we can just know that. But there are times that it will feel unrewarding. So what I find helpful in all of that is if we can kind of step back even just a little bit from the territory of, is this pleasing to me? You know, if we're really wanting a certain idea of happiness, we'll always be gauging, is this pleasing to me or not pleasing to me? Yeah. Is this working for me or not working for me? The happiness that we're pointing to is a bit wider than that. You know, of course, it's helpful. I don't think it's a bypass to appreciate when the conditions do come together and it's restful. So I think a lot of us are kind of scared of pleasant conditions, like, oh, I'm going to bypass, you know, if it's not full on difficulty, then nothing's like no pain, no gain. It's not that. I don't think that, if you happen to be in circumstances that are pleasant, linger in them. All of the neuroscience says linger, take an impression. It helps change your neurochemistry when you do that. So it's not just a facile thing to really take in when there is ease and pleasant circumstances. Oftentimes there won't be. And so to know that too, and so the things I mentioned too are the gratitude that goes along with kind of wise view and being able to step back and say, this too is part of the changing human experience, yeah, of being in this bio suit. This is part of it. This is part of it. And so this is kind of veering a little bit towards equanimity, but there can be we can start to steer. I think what it is we're getting less fixated on what is overwhelming or aversive. We're getting less fixated on the objects that tend to drive us into reactivity. Yeah, and so noticing that we have a little bit more freedom from that, being just completely enmeshed in it, even if there's a little bit more ease, we notice that. That is becomes like a positively reinforcing loop, right? So in a way, it's like we're resolving not to tank on the negative particulars of the situation. Yeah, maybe that's a way to frame it. So ease might be a better translation than happiness. Happiness might be there. But we're not, it's easy for a talk on happiness or joy to trigger and really want, like wanting an ideal state, wanting a perfect state. But to just appreciate that in a way, practice is just going in, to a large extent, going back and forth. So times when I feel at ease and peaceful, and times that I feel contracted and overwhelmed. And again, the ability to know our own experience, to be on the path at all, to have the luxury of even contemplating differences in happiness, that is a really good thing. That's a really good thing. So there's no easy answer, but to be able to pull back from the territory a little bit and not be so caught in whether I'm finding this pleasant or not, mm-hmm. is helpful for this kind of more robust happiness.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. And would also just like invite people to notice that when we're having discussions like this, it's kind of normalizing dukkha. So for some of us who've been around for a while, it now feels normal just to say, hey, this was a really unpleasant experience, or I had time in my life where it was really hard and overwhelming. And that brings a certain kind of ease to even say it out loud, to be heard, and to hear others say it. I always feel grateful that I can be in a place where, in a way, you don't have to perform as much. Yeah. That gives me a more contented experience of being human. So, I know we all have different work environments, but there is something about allowing more of ourselves the whole range of experience that strength that is supportive for this kind of happiness. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks, Emery. And Bob, do you have we should wrap up too, but Bob, and then we'll move towards closing. Yeah.
Hi, Carrie. I wondered if you could maybe talk about happiness in terms of the three conditions, maybe no self in particular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think they're very mutually supportive. So if I have a strong sense of myself, I think of a sense of self as having a lot to do with feeling like we're the owners of our experience. If I feel like I own my experience, then I have something that I have to defend or maintain or get right, or the strong sense of ownership tends to come with it a sense of heaviness and seriousness and self-referentiality, right? So everything is kind of filtered through a sense of me. Is this pleasing to me or not pleasing to me? Is this what I like, what I don't like, what I expected, what I didn't expect? But as we are more just aware of conditions, so that's the vitaka vichara, more just aware of what's actually happening, we recognize what's actually happening is a natural process that we can steer a little bit, but we can't control. And as that deepens, the sense of there being an owner of experience starts to fade, and that sense of heaviness also starts to fade, so that those also become kind of mutually reinforcing. So I really like Sayadaw Tejaniya's way of talking about not self as just be aware of everything as nature. As again, arising from causes and conditions, having certain characteristics and properties, certain things are supportive of other things, but that there isn't a central agent of control who's making it all happen. And that can be disorienting and a little kind of uncertain at times, but eventually that leads to a great sense of freedom and happiness. That's the happiness of, that's not the sukha kind of happiness, that's the happiness of nibbana or release, cooling, unwinding. Yeah, but that's where we're headed. It really helps to have a base of well-being and ease so that we can investigate some of the nature of those three characteristics.
So is this kind of happiness beyond self, you know, sort of I decide whether there's happiness or not? Is it just so kind of there and I yeah. notice it?
Yeah, yeah.
I attend to it?
Yeah, yeah. It's an interaction. We are part of nature. So it's like a reaction between this. Just because we don't have a self, it doesn't mean, or a lasting independent self, doesn't mean that there aren't responses to the environment. There aren't collaborations with the environment, right?
Thanks.
Yeah, yeah, thank you. So this is, sukha is not nibbana, it's not the end point, it's not the lasting happiness independent of conditions. It's a helpful supporting condition on the way. Yeah. But it can be accessed in more and more moments. Okay, thank you. Thanks, everybody. Appreciate your reflections and comments, and we'll have more time for discussion next time. I wanted to kind of lay it out more this time. Okay, I've gone a little bit over, so we can just close with the wish, the intention that our practice be of benefit to all beings everywhere, including ourselves without exception. And that we go well until next time. Thank you. Mm-hmm.